dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, coming to you each week throughout the spring, along with Jeremy Ward, as we talk some SVC baseball, softball, as well as some track. And Jeremy, as we look back, we kind of were touching on this last week, Adena baseball and Westfall, softball, they did go ahead and clinch their titles. Obviously, as we're taping here on Sunday night, show 123. We know that there's a Monday, Wednesday in the SVC to finish things out as they're chasing gold. Just to, your thoughts is obviously those two teams now champions look to do that, and maybe even some other parts of the standings or some matchups that you're looking forward to get this thing wrapped up here in 2015.
Well, the intrigue is going to be coming off of the tournament draw, and you're trying to maintain focus to close out the league schedule, but at the same time you're in the process of making sure all your pitchers, now that the weather is cooperative, now that you're getting your pitchers lined up the way you want them to be. So you kind of have a dual focus going in. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised baseball wise if maybe somebody sneaks up and gets one from Adena, but for the most part, I don't see it any differently than I did 3 weeks ago. Those are the most complete teams. They're really going to have a breakdown. I think, Adena did have in a non-leg game where they committed four or five errors, and it would take something like that type of subpar performance, really, for either one, Adena or Westfall.
Well, we talked about some track as well, and it seems like we've spent a lot of time talking and covering some of the throwers, and rightfully so when you look at some of the names and the accomplishments there. But I know in talking to a couple coaches through email and in person this week on the track side, I know Ella Skeens is starting to make quite a splash there on the girls' side. Had a real good invite down to, I believe it was Vinton County. And then I know Tony Hatfield, and talking to Coach Burke, really, really starting to peak. Well, hopefully not too early, but really starting to peak and do some nice things, defeating some of the area's top runners that had gotten him a time or two last year. So as we get closer and closer, this is that time of year I really start to enjoy the bombs page and going through and looking at some of the different times and matchups and different things, and looking ahead to the SVC meet. Just your thoughts on some of these real special athletes that we're used to seeing in other sports, Tony in football, Ella on the basketball court there, now doing it on the track as great athletes.
Well, yeah, no question when you're talking about athletes like that. I'm sure when you have multi-sport kids, probably as the year goes on, they're in much, much closer to peak condition. And in track, that's the perfect scenario when you're talking about, league meets and district type outings. So, I think the weather has to help with that as well. I know there was a little bit rainy. You talked about the Vinton County Invitational. I think there was rain at the beginning, and it was kind of a cool night. It's always interesting to see, because a lot of kids, probably depending on the event, the weather plays a huge factor, whether it's, wind, obviously, but the cold weather sometimes isn't bad for the distance runners, but not as good for the sprinters or the throwers. So, it'd be real interesting now when last Tuesday it's 52, and this week it's going to be maybe 85. So it'd be drastically different in a span of a week.
Well, Jeremy, the last thing here on our opening segment, the draw procedure. I had a chance to be a part of that today, get some baseball, softball feedback, and it was interesting. A lot of coaches who coach multiple sports and maybe already had some experience with this, be it on the volleyball side or the basketball side, boys or girls. And then, now today, and you get more and more feedback, and people are amazed just how quickly you can drive all the way to Jackson and be done. I mean, again, if you don't choose to eat, It starts at 2 o'clock. You literally could have been in your car if you wanted to be by, I'm not exaggerating, probably by about 2:10, 2:15.
So did you get a sub today or what did you
do? Well, I did. I went ahead and
I knew you weren't one of those that slipped out without eating.
Yes. Yeah. So they definitely take care of you with some food there, but, you know, it's just interesting to get some feedback. People maybe the most frustrated is probably some of the travel, be it a Sunday afternoon, some of the drives to Jackson, albeit supposed to be one of the more local in Southeast District, is still quite a trip for some people. And, you know, you go there and I think more and more people are starting to look to, can we do this online without going? I know a lot of leagues and a lot of sports, even in the SVC, Jeremy, have started to ask, can we do our all-league voting online instead of taking some of the time? So obviously, I know you've talked a lot on SVC Sports Talk on so many topics about the day and age of the technology and so forth. I just, you know, as we talk more and more about the draw here in a little bit, I'm just more interested in maybe getting your feedback on the – well, do you see any negatives, I guess, in terms of taking that face-to-face communication out and using a little bit more of the technology?
Well, it is a little bit dangerous. I would like to see it paired with something else. I'm not sure exactly, you know, what you're going to do, but some type of district meeting, conduct some sort of business at that time instead of just simply driving to pick up your piece of paper that you didn't need anyway. You know, I think it's very dangerous when you get away from the accountability of the face-to-face. But I guess maybe just tell the listeners, what would be the penalty? What if you didn't go today? Were they going to drop you out of the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, the way it's always worked in the past is not necessarily now because the voting's done. Now, before, keep in mind when you were voting, mm-hmm. I believe, if I remember correctly, Jeremy, they had the option to vote on you or not to vote on you, but nowadays you're already on the bracket, so really right. You have to attend 3 of your 5 meetings. So technically, as a coach, as long as I'm attending 3 of my 5 meetings, I don't know that I necessarily would have to be there today.
Right, and that's the interesting point. I noticed that River Valley again, and I know they had some controversy there about, you know, no shows and some of the things that had happened in the winter, but I noticed they had no record posted. I was intrigued by that as well.
I did see a couple schools today because they give you the printout now showing how each coach votes. I did notice a couple that did not vote, and we had heard of some different fines and penalties and different things there. I don't know, you know, exactly what the truth is with it being so new. You kind of get a lot of hearsay,
right?
And that's where I'd love to get a little bit more communication with maybe some of the district board to find that out.
And Shane, how I just got looking, because for whatever reason, I ended up having multiple conversations Thursday and Friday with coaches that I ran into or, you know, talked to on the phone just about their expectation. You know, I said, hey, what do you think about the online, or, you know, where do you think you're going to fall, whatever. So I had some really, really good conversation. And the biggest concern is, like you talked about, and I noticed when the records were posted, that there are numerous teams that do not have updated records. Now, I know Saturday's games, you know, wouldn't be on there, but even right. From Friday, there are numerous schools that do not have their records updated through Friday. And I mean, you're talking about teams. I know one in particular in softball.
Yes.
Got their pitcher back, hadn't had for about 10 games, wins Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That completely changes, or it could completely change
the way it could have
where
in
they're
the past.
Seated. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and we talked about this last week, too. I also had a couple softball coaches voice concern to me today that there was a couple bios, because the way the window opened up, I believe it was Monday through or maybe even Sunday through Wednesday. So let's say you put your record in there, and let's say you were 10-2 on Monday night. Well, then let's say you lose 3 times this week. Well, technically, you don't have to update it. You see what I'm saying? Right. You've already posted a bio within right. the window.
And
so instead
of
being 10-5, you're 10-2. Well, that's a big difference in the voting. So you have a lot of things they definitely need to iron out. I think you could argue that if you're going to use the technology, maybe some smaller windows, maybe some later week. I mean, it can't take that long to process the information once it's already into the database. So
right.
those are all things I'm sure they'll work out.
maybe one question would be this, same deal. If you have to drive to Jackson today, would you say, okay, this is what we have for everybody. This is where we stand. Are there any mistakes, or is there anything that anybody else, you know, let's make a final adjustment so we can get this as close to right as possible? Because how weird is it that you're sitting there and you know that those two guys across from you, maybe their 80s didn't help them out. You know, maybe they're not super familiar with the technology part of it. Or maybe they just plain didn't put in those last three games that they just happened to get beat to update, you know.
Right.
Instead of everybody just sitting there steaming about it, why not do something about it?
Right. Well, these are all going to be great things to get some feedback on, and then we'll talk about the draw here as well on both the softball and baseball side. So I tell you what, let's get right to it, fans. Stay with us. As baseball and softball Selection Sunday is now in the books, and since we have the brackets, we will talk postseason next. Well, Jeremy, a little Rocky music there. I have to ask you over the weekend. I don't know if you're much the boxing fan. Were you impressed with the big fight that everybody had to see?
No, I would never pay money to watch a fight. I would never contribute to those guys making 180, 150 million, whatever ridiculous amount it was. And from what I hear this morning, is boxing is still not back.
No. I tell you, the one thing it definitely is well a part of our off season into the summer here is the Crown Hill Golf Club, as we like to swing the club a little bit. I know my brother Matt and I got out this evening to hit the range a little bit, and a great deal up at Crown Hill Golf Club. The coupons right there on the website now, 3 pay, 4 play. Simply print it off. Use it all summer long. You just pay your three regular 18 holes with a cart, and that fourth personal pay for free. So pretty much get you well under $20 there if you do the math. So great stuff. Make sure you take advantage of that. Well, Jeremy, I'll tell you what. Let's go right into the softball draw. I'll kind of take the lead here and throw a couple different things out at you. You know, right off the bat, let's just go with Uniota. I know in the D2, where the Southeast just doesn't have as many teams there, it's a little bit tougher with the multiple rounds to get out. But obviously, Uniota sitting up there as the favorite in terms of a seed. Just your thoughts on the purple and gold into the postseason.
Well, that was interesting. The way things shook out, Jackson actually suffered three losses over the last week, or I think Jackson would have been the one seed there. So I think that was a last-minute thing for Uniota bouncing to the top. You know, interesting matchups because really two through – I could go probably almost to the seven. There's some good athletes, some teams that are pretty athletic. Not great pitching in that Division II sectional, so that might be one spot where Uniota has the edge, as well as Brooke Blevins been throwing the ball the last couple weeks. So you know, all in all, you know, you could lose in the sectional, or you could be, you know, pitching, playing for a trip to the regional or beyond. You know, the depth of talent really after the first round is pretty solid.
Well, and then I go on to Division III, and you know, unfortunately, you're always going to get some of these SVC head-to-head that kind of beat one another up. But you start right there at the top of the bracket, and you get to the 4 or 5 game of Zane Trace Huntington, and that's one that jumps out at you. Just, you know, your thoughts is those two are going to play for a sectional championship with the right to go play a top seed, which would be most likely Alexander there.
Right. I think, again, you know, when you look at pitching as being so critical in the tournament, not only bad luck, I think, for Zane Trace and Huntington to be paired together there, but Alexander has an outstanding pitcher. Very, very nice player. Comparable to a Morgan Geno type player, you know, powerful, great hitter, and just continuing to develop with her stuff as a pitcher as she gets older. So, you know, I don't think there's a lot of great pitching outside of really Wheelersburg and Alexander as you look down that bracket. As far as dominance, I know Rock Hill's got an awfully good pitcher, but you know, if either Zane Trace or Huntington have fallen someplace else, they could be really, really dangerous. But that's a tough matchup for them.
Well, and if you extend that bracket out, Piketon gets the 2 seed there. It looks like they are somewhat favorites to advance out a couple rounds, but then they too would run into that Alexander pitcher there in the district final. But again, probably a district championship type of team in Piketon this year. Is that fair?
Certainly possible. They're a team that they have to make the routine play. They have to field the ball to have a chance. When they've done that, they've had no trouble beating anybody. But when they've struggled a little bit defensively, that's kind of been their nemesis.
Real quick on Piketon, Jeremy. I had a chance to watch him play one night where I had a cancellation. I went over to do some baseball scouting and kind of took in some of the softball game just as obviously as a website guy here and a fan of the league. And then following them, I had a chance to talk to a couple different softball coaches. It seems like a lot of times with softball, you do it more with the small ball and the different things. But it seems like in the Piketon lineup, they have two or three kids maybe with a little bit more of a pop in terms of maybe able to leave the ballpark or hit the gap or so forth, just a little bit more power. Is that fair? Is that something with Piketon's offense that maybe they have that can make them dangerous against a really good pitcher to where maybe, you know, you have the ability to, you know, maybe just square one up once or twice in a game?
Well, what they have is their top three or four hitters are really aggressive, and they really make you pay if you can't locate early in the count. And you know, they're not a team that strikes out a lot. At the bottom of the order, they have some slappers, and they'll bunt a little bit. But their top hitters are really aggressive, and you know, they do a lot of damage with extra base hits in those top four hitters.
Well, then I keep moving down here. Obviously, you mentioned Wheelersburg. Looking at that bracket, it looks like they're going to really have their way on out to the district final
that,
area
that
there.
Could be extremely ugly. Yeah, I mean, Wheelersburg could just absolutely embarrass almost every team in that bracket. That will be very interesting to watch.
Now, on the bottom part of that bracket is where we find some more SVC flavor. Southeastern's going to come in a 7-10 matchup with Oak Hill Southeastern. Winner plays Megs. And then Adina, who obviously has had a year where they've proven they can compete. They're probably considered heavy favorites in the West Union game. Then they're going to take on an Eastern Brown team there at 10-1 in terms of the draw record. But obviously, Adina, very battle-tested with the top half of the SVC. Certainly a matchup that I feel like they can compete in and possibly maybe get themselves out to the district level there. Your thoughts on Adina?
Well, it'll be interesting. You know, they've played much better. They've run into maybe a little rough spot over the last week or so. So it'll be interesting to see that they'll bounce back. And again, it's a team that when they don't make mistakes and they field the ball cleanly and they're efficient on offense, they're really capable of playing with anybody.
Obviously, there's a couple really good pitchers over there in the Southern Hills Athletic Conference. But as you start to take a look at a team like Eastern, I mean, is it fair to say you know, Adina may be playing an opponent there that I don't know if this is a fair question or not, that would maybe fare somewhat similar in the SVC as the Lady Warriors did?
It's very possible. I know Eastern Brown has been on Union Yoda's schedule in the past, but that game has not been played for the last few years, so I have not seen Eastern play. Sure. You know, I know they obviously made a big turnaround back to their normal selves in girls basketball this past year after a couple of
down
spells.
Nice freshman class, yeah.
Right. So you have to believe that, you know, Eastern's one of those schools where typically, you know, kids play multiple sports. So you have to believe that, you know, as the other sports come up, you know, softball comes with it. So I'm not real familiar. But overall, that league is not a real strong softball league. Leesburg is pretty darn good, I know, for a D4. But other than that, you know, it is hard to tell. And I'm sure they haven't faced the type of pitching night in and night out as what Adina has.
Sure. That's an interesting point you just made there. I know Eastern and volleyball, I had a chance to see them. A couple of nice athletes, not a real good volleyball team. But then in basketball, a lot of young talent, much improved. So that's interesting that you make that point. It'd be interesting to see a roster there to see what kind of names maybe show up on the softball roster that we've seen on the basketball court. So let's move down the bracket here. Top seed Westfall, obviously battle tested from a year ago as they start another special run, they hope. And it looks like in the first couple rounds here that they're going to be heavy favorites. And as we move out, if I'm listening correctly to what you say earlier, maybe intrigued by a matchup with a pretty good Rock Hill team led by a good pitcher.
Yes. I, like I said, I have not seen a few of those players play in the past year, but I know they were had some athletes and some nice pitchers and nice players coming up. So, you know, with that record and their performance in the OVC, you know, that's indicative. I know their non-league schedule isn't bad, so could be pretty interesting. But I tell you what, Westfall, I do love their draw, and you know, they roll them with confidence. You know, they're really in a good spot to make another nice run.
Well, then we round out our seeding here. We go to the Division IV bracket. Paint Valley does kind of still get an opportunity to play at home here in an 8-9 game against Glenwood. Then they're going to play a really talented Fairfield top seed if they're able to win there. But obviously Paint Valley has just been hit with the really difficult news. Talking to a lot of people throughout the week here, when you look at some of the scores of the first round games in which she played in, be it the win against Southeastern or the near knockoff of Uniota at 3-2, and then you look at some of these scores the second half of the season, and that in itself, just even the average softball fans, a common sense illustration of what she means to a softball team. But, you know, again, the Lady Bearcats with a chance to play a home game here, perhaps maybe still a first-round game and get a chance to return to the sectional final. Just your thoughts on the loss of Newland and on where the Paint Valley program goes from here with, you know, what seems to be improved junior high numbers and a hope to have a JV team next year for the first time in forever, really.
Well, and I'll even go a step further. I was actually down at some lower levels practices today and saw some Paint Valley kids playing and taking the opportunity to get some time on some travel teams and get out there. So I think what you do see is, you know, a longer reaching effect of their tournament run last year, and just generating a little bit of excitement and getting those kids out wanting to play, wanting to, you know, do some of the same things that helped, you know, put that group last year in the spot they were in. So sometimes you may not see that immediate, like you said, that with the injury, but the residual of that and the trickle down of that is very impactful.
Well, that's good stuff there on the softball side. We'll get to break it down more as it starts to unfold here in the upcoming weeks. But fans, stay with us as we turn our attention to baseball next, where we look at the tournament trail for the SVC.
When me and my friends go out in the town, we can't sit still, we can't sit down. We don't like to fight and we don't like to scuffle, but we dance all night doing the curly shuffle. Hey Mo, hey Mo,
hey Mo, hey Mo.
Well, yuck, 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 yuck.
Yuck, 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 yuck.
Whatty-dee, whatty-dee. Well, we never miss a chance. We get up and dance and do the curly shuffle.
Now we'll turn the page and look at the baseball draw. And Shane, I'll just kind of get your opinion on things as we start with Division II. Again, pretty nice looking sectional of talent, so to speak. Uniota finds themselves in the 8th seed, and they'll play the play-in game next Saturday as they'll host Vinton County.
Well, yeah, Uniota is a capable team. They're a lineup that can really wear you out, is the kind of terminology I like to use. They can really athletically do some things top to bottom, and starts up there at the top with Edler and White, can really set the table. Both are kind of what I call in my scouting reports is line the line hitters. They're really tough to strike out, and they really set the table. And then you know, on the mound, if they're able to utilize some of their pitching depth to get through that first game, they're obviously going to have their hands full with Memphis. But nonetheless, they're going to put a really good pitcher on the mound. The Sigler kid's had a good year. I think he has 6 wins now, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, you'll take your best shot. Obviously, Memphis really, really good. So that's a tough draw that they get stuck in that 8-9 game. But again, Uniota's a good team that certainly has played teams on their schedule the caliber of Memphis here. So we'll see how it goes for the Shermans. But again, good baseball team. They're capable.
So that brings up an interesting point, I think, because you know you have that play-in game. So you go Saturday, Monday. You definitely have to roll the dice that you can get through that first one and save Sigler for the other. But you always run that risk of, you know, maybe having to bring him in. You know. But at the end of the day, you know, Sigler gives you certainly a chance against Memphis.
Well, he does. And again, that's no disrespect to any team that you would play in a first round game. Right. I just think that the way Division II sets up, when you get stuck in that game, it's what, they're 3 games in, what is that, about 5-6 days. You really just don't have a choice. And I think Uniota does have enough depth to where they'll be able to do that. And to try to give them their best overall chance to win a sectional title.
Right. And I think the Vinton County with 3 wins, but they did beat Oak Hill and dominated Oak Hill. And so I think, again, you run into the wrong pitcher. That's always the name of the game.
No
and
question.
That right. Strategy. All right. So we move to Division III. You look at the top of the Division III bracket, and, you know, everybody knows what you're going to see there in the Wheelersburg Pirates. You know, I think maybe, you know, it's nice to see that there are no SVC teams the way that sets up, having to match up until you go down to the bottom side of that district bracket, where you have Westfall and West in the 7-10 game. Westfall will host with the winner playing Lucasville Valley.
Westfall's a really good baseball team. I mean, I know the record's there, but and I don't have it in front of me, but I would think if you would go back down a list of Westfall scores, you're talking about a baseball team that has probably lost 5, 6, 7 games by a run or two, and they've lost a lot of them in the 6th and 7th inning where maybe they just haven't been able to finish things off. But they have a really legitimate kid in the Griner kid we faced the other night at the VA. Throws the ball well, throws a lot of strikes. This is a pretty athletic team, and if they're able to get some offensive production from 6, 7, 8, 9, I mean, really, this is a capable team. I know Valley's obviously battle-tested in the great league they play in. I know the other night, looking at some of the Valley articles as I was researching some teams in that conference, that, you know, obviously even the West game is not going to be a gimme because West has got a proud program and Coach Rapp does a great job. But, you know, that's a bracket that, you know, with Westfall's situation, I mean, I think that they're very capable, maybe somewhat of a sleeper.
Well, and tell me what you think about this, but I always thought, you know, Westfall is one of the tougher places to play, and especially for a team that would normally, you know, I don't know if West has ever played at Westfall, but that has to be a huge advantage in that type of matchup as well.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, that's not the shortest of bus rides either. You know, right. It's a situation where it's funny you say that. Coach Thomas and I were just talking the other night as we were waiting out the 3.5-hour delay of the Jackson greet-up game, so our game can start about 9 o'clock. We were just talking about the VA, and as much as you love to play the VA, he was discussing with me how he just kind of hates to give up his home games. He loves to play there whenever he gets a chance to, but he does feel like he has a home field advantage up there. It's windy. It's, you know, it's just a different the game plays a little differently at Westfall. There's no doubt about it.
No question. As we move down to the you know, the bottom bracket, and the number one seed is the Edina Warriors. And, you know, here again, we get that 8-9 game with SVC teams playing.
Hate this bracket.
Yeah, Southeastern hosting Huntington for the right to go play at Edina. And, you know, I think you could look at the seedings in this bracket, and they could really have been all, you know, they could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
But you just try, you know, hoped you could avoid this, and it just didn't happen.
No question. This is the number one thing that jumped out at me as I just kind of cringed when I looked at the bracket coming out of my room today. And and saw the D3. And here's why. Obviously, we know how good Adina is. Adina is capable no matter what bracket. As Adina just showed over the weekend when they went head-to-head with Wheelersburg, Adina is capable of going anywhere on this entire bracket and making the regional. But as I looked at the – just for the overall league, Huntington's an extremely dangerous baseball team. And then Southeastern, I'm telling you right now, they go 1-2 on their pitching staff, and I'll match them up with anyone just in terms of the pitching. One from the left side and die, one from the right side and pop. And to see those three have to just kind of beat up on each other and go – That's kind of disappointing for the league. But nonetheless, if you're a baseball fan, Southeastern Huntington going at it, that's going to be a good one. And then no matter which way you go, I know Adina Southeastern's played some two low-scoring games for the most part. And again, Huntington's a scrappy bunch that they're very capable. So you hate it for the league. It's going to make for some exciting baseball. But obviously two of our eight teams are going to be knocked out before you even get started there.
You know, and I think an interesting point in that bracket to mention is an Oak Hill team, 13-9, and obviously Coach Wright does a great job with them, and you know, you've seen them at the VA since he's taken over. They actually, their best pitcher and another one of their better players, you know, did not play the first half of the season. So
Spriggs, is that the name? Spriggs.
Yes. So you have a drastically different team in terms of talent. So you're talking 13-9, and I don't know what the record was before that, but I do know, they're a much, much deeper, much stronger team. Maybe some bad luck for Adina, because otherwise maybe Oak Hill's in that 2 or 3 spot.
Well, that's a good point. I've noticed in a couple of the brackets today, if I were going to question seeding anywhere, and it's tough to question seeding when you're not, you know, maybe familiar with all the conferences, and a lot of the leagues are not covered media wise quite like ours is in terms of knowing records throughout the year and some stats and some head to head matchups. But yeah, the Oak Hill team there in a four, like you said, with the roster made up as it is now, easily probably more of a 2-3 talent, which could make for an interesting matchup out there at the VA if seeds would hold.
Certainly. And as we move down, all the way at the bottom of the bracket, matched up with Portsmouth in the 6-11 game is Piketon, and then the winner of that game will travel to Zane Trace. Zane Trace getting the 3 seed, Piketon the 11.
Well, the number one thing you jumps out at you here from an SVC perspective is how healthy is the battery for Coach Bumgardner with Jordan and Fremder. Both been a little banged up down the stretch here, and Piketon's kind of hit hard times as a result. If they're healthy and they're ready to go, they become extremely dangerous. Because not only are those two pitcher catcher, but they're also 1-3 in the order and really make that lineup go. The second thing, Jeremy, that jumps out at me in that bracket is don't underestimate the importance of that bye for Zane Trace. This Zane Trace lineup is really, really good. I mean, they can hit. I mean, they just had a night here about a week ago where they had 23 hits in a game and so forth. But also, Coach Allen has a mixture of types of pitchers, and the fact that he will not have to play a game and he just goes straight to the final will allow him to look at some matchups and to maybe look at using a couple different arms if he sees fit or whatever he needs to do. But I think that really helps the Zane Trace pitching staff maybe kind of stay fresh and have all the weapons available to Coach Allen there. So again, obviously we're pulling for Piketon so that we can get an all SVC matchup. So we can definitely get one of the league out to the paint stadium. But again, if Piketon's healthy and Zane Trace, their rested pitching staff, the winner of that game is going to represent our league just fine.
And that leaves us with the trip to Division IV, where the Pink Valley Bearcats sit atop the bracket here with the 1 seed. Obviously, some great postseason success last year, and might get a rematch of a district game from last year with Leesburg, as the Leesburg Manchester winner will advance to play you guys for the sectional final.
Well, it's kind of a weird situation. I know head-to-head, Leesburg has beaten Manchester a couple times, but Manchester's a team that if I'm being quite honest, throughout the second half of the season, as I kept seeing the record, kind of surprised me a little bit. Now, keep in mind, they've only played 10 games down there this year to this point in terms of their bio record. I'm not sure if that's changed since, but Manchester is a team that was in district final last year. They upset Notre Dame and then went to the VA, I believe, and beat, I want to say, Waterford. A kid by the name of Frost, a right-hander, a pretty nice athlete, throws the ball pretty hard. Again, anytime he wins a couple tournament games and goes on to compete at the district level there in just his sophomore year, he comes back as a junior now. That definitely has my attention. And I know, obviously, Leesburg is a program we have a high level of respect for in terms of going back to last year. So, I know certainly we'll work real hard to learn from some situations earlier in the year where we kind of got caught peeking ahead a little bit and it bit us. And you know, we're going to try to mature from that and make sure that we have high level respect for our opponent here, because either one of these teams coming in are going to have a solid pitcher on the mound and be very capable.
No question about it. Anything else about that Division IV bracket that sticks out? I mean, this is, you know, when we talk about the super sectional, I think when it comes to the contention, I think you're going to see a lot of the schools that have a contention with that in this particular bracket because they're spread out all over the place.
I think that's fair. I mean, obviously it's hard for me. I try to wear two different hats here. One is a coach. One is kind of a media guy, if you will, or whatever the word I'm supposed to use is. Obviously, as a coach, my focus is going to be Manchester, Leesburg, getting that scout, really getting to know those teams as well as I can. But obviously, it's my job as a coach to at least have my team prepared if we are fortunate enough to advance. And, you know, Jeremy, when I look at the bracket, I see a really tough situation that I kind of saw coming just because what happens is in the voting on that other side, you have a real high TVC hockey division and fair or not. That's just when they go to vote, you can kind of see it on the paper as you look out through the votes, the way it happened. Sims Valley knocked down to the two. And then the other outsider, if you will, would be South Webster, and South Webster comes in at 10-6. But as you just discussed on the Division III bracket, you're looking at Wheelersburg and you're looking at Valley. Then on the Division II bracket, that Memphis team's not too bad this year. The you know, they obviously are really, really battle tested. So for them to come in four seed, I've always felt like South Webster and Paint Valley probably have a little bit of a correlation, playing in a really, really high respected D3, somewhat D2 league, you know, with the Uniota flavor in ours and the Memphis in the SOC there. So, yeah, obviously the South Webster down at the four, some people would question there. But I think the super sectional, when you compare the one side to the other side, is probably talked about a little bit in Division IV the last couple of years, far more than in some of the other divisions, or at least that's the feedback I get.
Right. Same here. And I know you have some baseball and softball coaches in Division IV that have been around for a long time. And, you know, I know they're adamantly against that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Jeremy, some really interesting discussion there. I'm hoping to get some feedback here to let us know what you're wanting us to talk about, softball, baseball, draw and tournament, because as we start to meet next Sunday night to do the show, we'll be getting right into that tournament week with a little bit of even opening matchups, I guess, on that Saturday, correct? Because we have some first-round games. So, well, I'll tell you what, as we move into our three up, three down, we want to take a look at Crown Hill Golf Club one more time. Again, that coupon is now on the website. Make sure you check that out, the 3 pay 4 play. And I also don't want you to forget, still highlighting it on the front of the website, don't forget about that great deal that they had that I announced a couple weeks back, 5-round membership with cart for just $100. So go ahead and get that budgeted early in the year, and then you can take advantage of that throughout the entire summer. So, well, Jeremy, I'll tell you what, on the three up, three down, let's change roles a little bit. I'll still have you go first, but let's have you give a baseball answer. I'll give a softball answer, and then afterwards we'll see if we agree with one another. Bruce, what do you have for us?
As you look over the brackets, who could be labeled the SBC sleeper?
Well, you know, you mentioned before, you know, the pitching and the matchups and all of that. And, you know, I really think Uniota falling down in that playing game Probably wasn't the best thing for Minford. I think Unioda could be very, very dangerous. They played much better the back half of the season. And when their pitching's on, like you said, their lineup is awfully dangerous.
Well, I think on the softball side, I'd have to go with the Adena team. They've been knocking on the door all year long, showing the ability to compete into the fourth and fifth inning with a lot of elite teams. I think they'll advance through the first round without a lot of trouble. And then in the final, certainly not going to be the favorite on paper, but I think they're battle-tested enough that they could be just dangerous enough. That would be a one thing in the SBC in terms of sleeper that I'd pay attention to.
Which team, if any, was seeded unfairly from the conference?
Well, I don't know if it was completely unfair, but I really, really don't like the draw for Southeastern. You know, I look at the other teams in the league that were spread from the 7th seed down to the 11, and, you know, Southeastern, I believe, was 5-2 against those teams. And what you win for slipping out of that is you know, that play into Adena.
Well, I guess on the softball side, if I really studied it, I think it was pretty fair. In some cases, it was treated pretty fair. I think some things maybe in the non-conference and so forth around some of the other teams that I saw. But in terms of the SVC and softball, I feel like it was pretty well done.
Give the fans a game or a potential game that could take place on the tournament trail that everyone will want to watch.
Well, I really, I will look forward for you, Coach Combs. I really look forward to that Southwestern and Paint Valley game because I think Southwestern has a very talented sophomore class. They have baseball players. And I think that Paint Valley has baseball players, and there's nothing like watching that go on. So for a first-round district game at Paint Stadium in Division IV, you can't always say that. You get some lopsided matchups, but I think that's going to be an outstanding matchup.
I think on the softball side, I don't think you're going to have to wait very long. I think you just go straight to the 15th there, the Huntington at Zane Trace, the 4-5 matchup. Lytle, late in the year here, this second half of the year, she's really gone to a high level. Zane Trace offense is really good. Swackhammer getting better at all the time, keeping them in the game. And I just think that's going to be an exciting one. Now, there's certainly things down the tournament trail with Westfall's possible run, Piketon's possible run. But I just think if from an SBC perspective, that Huntington Zane Trace sectional championships is one to watch.
Interesting, Shane. So let's go back to number one with the sleeper. Baseball-wise, you know, where would you go?
Well, I think, you know, I was saying, Nadine, on the softball side, I think you were interesting talking there. I guess I would first ask you just to kind of take a look in terms of when you see the word sleeper, when you're answering that question, were you kind of eliminating – or how were you doing that? Were you eliminating, say, the top three teams, top half the league? How do you view that term when you answer that question?
I think I viewed it more just like in the bracket, in the position they were in, you know, how would they be favored, or, you know, who would be expected to come out of, you know, maybe their side of the bracket.
Sure. I think – To the common fan that maybe does not follow the ins and outs, they might see Piketon struggle down the stretch and maybe not know their situation. That's a really dangerous baseball team if those two are back healthy. I mentioned.
Do you like that matchup with Portsmouth? That was the one thing that kind of scared me away from that spot, because I think Portsmouth's kind of a dangerous team in that spot.
Well, I think that's a legitimate concern for Zane Trace and Piketon there. If you were to ask me a sleeper going into the tournament without ever looking at a bracket, I would have said Southeastern just off of the two times I played them. Again, I wouldn't need more than one hand to count the number of times we saw pitching as good as the two guys they threw at us. But then you all of a sudden you see the bracket there, you have a head-to-head SVC matchup, and then they're in Adena's bracket. They're going to go, you know, so it's one of those situations where if you look at the SBC standings and you're willing to use the sleeper, the reason I asked you the question I did, if you're willing to use the sleeper term kind of loosely, it kind of applies to over three-fourths of the league, doesn't it?
No, I think so. I think that's a very fair point.
Well, let me ask you on the softball side there with Adina. I know we touched on it earlier a little bit. It is interesting to see maybe where Eastern Brown's at. But when you consider where the Huntington Zane Trace bracket falls there with who they'd have waiting on them, if a sleeper term again was going to be looked at in terms of maybe just trying to win a sectional championship or something like that, maybe Adina. I did think about Piketon in terms of a sleeper going to maybe a district championship type of situation, but I don't know that I would label Piketon a sleeper. So again, I kind of go back to my original question to you on who are you considering maybe available to answer this question.
Right. And although Piketon would have to be, you know, some teams that have tournament success in the past and Valley and West more than likely,
sure.
You're still, you know, they're the two seeds. So that is kind of difficult, but you know, I think the sleeper possibly is, you know, I just kind of look at Huntington and, you know, assuming that they would actually even get by Zane Trace, I think the teams have had a really difficult time against Lytle in the tournament that haven't seen her. And I think that could really, with the pressure kind of being on Alexander as that top seed, make for an interesting matchup.
And it's hard not to remember that, you know, keep in mind Elena Lytle just a couple of years ago beat, wasn't it Wheelersburg that no one thought she would beat too.
Right.
So, you know, you do have that experience to fall back on. Real quick, I want to just throw something out at you. I mean, I know they're a one seed, but with Westfall's success last year and this year, do you look at Uniota as a little bit of a sleeper if there ever was such a thing in the one seed? It just seems like as I talk to people around the league and even a couple people down there today that, yeah, they're the top seed, but not a lot of people are talking about them. Do you see a team there that can put it together to maybe kind of one seed or not kind of have a quiet run to maybe try to compete for a district title?
Well, maybe self-inflicted. You know, I think, you know, it's been I'd say the last 3 years, and you know, last year they weren't quite as good, but you know, the past couple of years I think they had high hopes for tournament success and were probably highly favored to make it to the district finals and haven't reached that point. I think maybe this year they have the opportunity to play with a chip on their shoulder, and yeah, they kind of slid into that one seed at the end of the year, but maybe with a lot to prove.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's a lot of debate on two. So time-wise, let's jump down to three here a little bit. I know you're kind of joking with me there, but in all seriousness, from a coach's perspective, you try to balance this because, you know, it's just the way a coach's mind works. My mind all day long since I left there has been thinking Leesburg, Manchester, and different things. And then obviously there's another part of my mind here on Sunday night thinking about the Adina Warriors and having to go play them tomorrow night. But then you're also trying to do your job in terms of prepare because you look at the dates and so forth, and you got to try to at least put together a scouting report on both Waterford and South Webster. I just wanted you to play coach for a second, maybe explain to the fans what all goes into that in your opinion in terms of trying to put 5-6 different scouting reports together when in reality you might only need one or two of them, or if you don't do your job you may only need one of them. But just kind of talk us through that a little bit once the brackets come out, what a coach is going to go through over the next 10 days.
Well, that's interesting, and I would ask you because I think Paint Valley and Uniota have a very different situation. Those Division III teams, I think, are pretty familiar with each other. But you get the Division II and the Division IV, and it's unlikely you've played a lot of those teams. Right. And it's almost unrealistic that you can get to a 5 o'clock game and watch them play in a lot
right.
of cases. So you really are relying on your contacts and building a network with other coaches to get critical information about probably – I don't know. Would you say the biggest thing is having an understanding about the other team's pitching staff?
I think that's fair. I can't speak for everyone. I know what I try to do is I try to look once the bracket comes out, or this is how I've done it in the past. You know, be it if we were, you know, a year where we were struggling, or last year when we were pretty good, or this year when, you know, we're getting better. But the way I try to do it is I take the bracket And starting tomorrow there, I'll start to make my files and I'll start to compile information on Leesburg and Manchester. And that'll be at the top of my list. But then I'll also just try to do advanced scouting. And again, we could lose that first game, but I still feel like you have to do your job and be prepared so that you are ready if you're lucky enough to advance. We'll start to put together a file on Waterford as well as South Webster. And then, you know, we might even start to have a little bit of advanced look, knowing that we'll at least get a look at if we were to go further than that. But I think it's interesting, coach to coach. I know a lot of coaches will just tell you, hey, I take care of myself and we try to be prepared and ready to go. But I do think there's some interesting things there when it comes to pitching and coming to the lineup in terms of that research. Baseball, for some reason, is not looked at as much in scouting. If this were basketball or football, you'd be talking about getting films and going out and watching them and things like that. But I think, man, maybe that is my basketball background. I'm still really heavy into the scouting and preparation. I think that really can give you an advantage if you've had an opportunity to see a lineup one time, or especially if you've been lucky enough to sit behind home plate and watch a kid pitch.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jeremy, time-wise, let's get moving on here. That's really good discussion. I'm sure we'll get to revisit it. I'll let fans know they can talk to us on Facebook, Twitter. The inbox is admin1@svcsportzone.com, or give us a call, 740-569-3254. Interesting, Have a Clue Blue comes from us from a local situation this past week, talking about some different situations and gives a first and third situation, and there was a bunt there at the plate, and as the play unfolds, basically, without getting into too much detail here, so that we're not maybe talking about a particular game that someone has seen or whatnot, I want to talk about basically what the question ends up being, and that was a situation of where basically the field umpire tells a coach that he had the good look and the runner is safe. The coach is asking if he'll just kind of ask for help there a little bit. And I guess my question to you would be, do you feel like umpires could have better game management a lot of times if the coach is asking correctly, just to go ahead and ask? Or do you think sometimes gosh, I don't know if this is fair or unfair of me to use the word, ego kind of gets in the way and maybe can kind of have tension rise a little bit when they're unwilling to do that. Just your thoughts on situations in the two-man crew throughout the game where one person's asking for help from the other and kind of how that communication and how that partnership works there.
You know, and this is a great question, because I do think that, you know, why not ask for help? And when you ask an umpire or an official for help, why would they not just go ahead and get together? Because again, what are they trying to do? They're trying to get it right.
Right.
Now I do understand. Now this is the one thing that, you know, as much as you yell, there's much more yelling going back and forth in a basketball game or a football game. Certainly basketball, because the pace. But usually when there's questions like that, what's the coach going to do? He's going to try to get a quiet moment where he can get the official right beside him and ask the question.
Right.
Well, in baseball and softball, what gets me sometimes is that the coaches yell across the field at the umpire. Now, when you do that, it doesn't create a very good situation. But what's the alternative? You run out to the position, because that usually doesn't go well either. So I think part of that is it always comes across as you're being reactionary or you're screaming at the official.
And when in reality, you're just trying to talk, you know, 70 feet away maybe.
Exactly. But I guess my thing on help is it's just like, you know, if there's some confusion on a tip ball that went out of bounds, why don't you just go get together and get it right? And so many times you see the umpires yell at each other. You know what I mean? Can you help me, or will you appeal it, or did you see it? And then they go out or safe. Why not just get together and talk about it?
Well, I was intrigued what you were saying last week in terms of a position, because on this call here, as I'm reading through the scenario, is if you have a safe out call at first base, the umpire from the infield is viewing an angle where they, okay, the ball beat them there, I have an out call. And in this situation, the coach is asking about a pull of the foot at first base. Well, the home plate umpire is looking right down the line, and oftentimes you'll go. I had a situation in the game over the weekend. I had an outstanding umpiring crew, and we had a situation where it was interesting, and you could tell that these guys had worked together far more. You had a bang-bang play at first, and I don't know that I've ever heard a guy say this. Without even a coach asking for help, the umpire said, I have a ball beating the runner, sir, did the foot remain on the bag? And the home plate umpire said, yes, it does. We have an out. And they kind of like, boom, boom. It was like done in like 3 seconds. And the communication was, like the call or not, the communication was such that everybody in the ballpark knew that, hey, these two just worked together. The ball beat the runner. The foot stayed on. How do you argue that? I mean, it's one of those. So I think it goes back to your stripes on fire in basketball, in terms of so much of an umpire's ability to manage the game, signal correctly, communicate correctly. But man, and when you were telling me about some of the positioning on the softball diamond, I would think needing help on a call like that would become far more commonplace than maybe even on the baseball diamond.
Certainly would. And the one thing that I will add, because this was a first and third situation, was that the home plate umpire better not have been looking at first base, because there's a play coming to the plate. So there's a responsibility there. And I think the biggest issue in this situation, if it's first and third and there's a play at first, and, you know, especially if it's kind of like the, neighborhood play at second on a double play. You'll see a lot of times in softball, they're going to cheat that play at first to come off to make a throw. So there's no question the home plate umpire would have a better view. But if he's responsible for a runner on third base coming home and he's not looking there, then you're going to have a lot bigger problems result from that if there's a play at the plate. You know, he might be late or he might be out of position because he's wandered out towards first to make sure she had her foot on the bag. So I think, again, those are situations you have to think about. And that's a direct result of just only having two umpires, and they can only handle a certain part of the field.
Well, it certainly is. In terms of game management, I think a lot of times it certainly doesn't hurt just to go ask. You know, the home plate umpire could always come back and just say, from my vantage point, I didn't see the play any differently or something like that. It's just, I think sometimes that stubborn attitude that can really, coaching's already fired up and, you know, it's an intense situation. I think, you know, just game management wise. And I think a lot of times that's what comes down to, you know, the umpire just has the power there, and it becomes a very frustrating thing as a coach that you just have to learn to deal with. But I would say, and maybe this is me being biased as a coach, that as an umpire, you can solve so much tension and so many things just by taking a moment to ask and then signaling the call, just to show you're willing to do that, to make sure, as you say, Jeremy, that you're going to get it right. So great question. Those are the types of things right here in the real live games that are deciding a lot of the league standings and so forth that are very important. I do want to say real quick before we get out of here, I had an awesome email come into the website today as some of the new enrollment numbers are being released. And It discussed some of the interesting trends in the league and what could happen to some of the different schools on the boys and girls side. And we'll touch on that a little bit next week as we get into postseason a little bit. Jeremy, didn't quite have time to really study it the way I wanted to and get that, but appreciated that email, and that'll definitely be a part of next week. So, you know, listeners, if you have a chance to check out those enrollment numbers, and you have any comments for Jeremy or myself and how you think that could influence the upcoming SVC school year, by all means, let us know. So, well, Jeremy, before we get out of here, any final thoughts here as we get ready for the postseason?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see. I'm sure you're going to have a lot of teams picking up extra games to fill in the gaps before the tournament start, especially with the weather turning to being considerably better. So it's going to be interesting to see if we have another month or so of SVC baseball and softball.
no question about it. Very exciting. So fans, make sure you check out the website throughout the week and get those emails in. Get us a phone call in. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about on some of the upcoming shows. So until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the fine people at DBK Media Services, and for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.